This 26th day of January 2012 in San Diego, we are reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam 11th Canto, General History, Chapter 30, The Disappearance of the Yadav Dynasty, text number 39. Shri Bhagavan Vacha, Ma Bhajare Tamuttishta, Kama Esha Kutohime,
Kama Esha Kutohime.
Yahi tvam madanugyato Svargam sukutinam padam Ma bhajare tamuttishta Kama esha kutohime Yahi tvam madanugyato Svargam sukutinam padam. Translation, the Supreme Personality of Godhead said, My dear Jara, do not fear. Please get up. What has been done is actually my own desire. With my permission, go now to the abode of the pious, the spiritual world. Om Jnana Timurandasya Jnananda Shalakaya Chakshu Unmilitam Mena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. I was born in the darkness of ignorance. My spiritual master, Srila Prabhupada, opened my eyes with the torchlight of knowledge. I offer my humble obeisance to him and all members of Sri Parampara. Okay. Now, why is he telling Jara not to fear? What is it that has been done that is Krishna's actual desire that Jara may worry about? Anyone remember? Aside from you and you? What is that? What happened exactly? Describe a little bit. Yes. Now, what was special about that arrow? Do you remember, Pete? The tip of that arrow. Anyone remember? Bhakta Alec?
It was made with the remaining small piece.
Yes. What happened was that the young boys of the Yadav dynasty got kind of rambunctious, and they tried to play a trick on a group of great sages who were there in Dwarka. And they dressed Samba up as if he were a girl who was pregnant. And they mockingly asked the sages. What did they mockingly ask the sage?
Is this going to be a boy or a girl?
Yeah, they're going to be a boy or a girl. So they became very angry, the sages. And they said, just see that there's now an iron club in this, it's supposed to be a pillow, I guess. It's now an iron club. And that club will be the destruction of the whole dynasty. So the boys were mortified. Suddenly they went white. Said, oh my God, what have we done? So they ran to the assembly. And in that assembly was Ugrasen was there. He was the titular king, actually, of Dwarka. And they told what happened, and everyone was. They just said, oh, what are we going to do now? So all they could think of to do was to grind up that club, that iron ball, say, into little pieces, fine filings. So they did that and threw it, took it all the way to Prabhas and threw it into the ocean there. But of course, when you grind something, if you ever ground up a carrot, there's always a little part left that you can't grind. You grind your fingers. So there's this little piece left that was an iron ball or a little lump. And he threw that as far as he could into the ocean. He said, well, that's the best we can do. You know, and they went back to Dwarka. What happened with those iron filings? You remember, Matt?
They washed up, I'm sure.
And? Wherever the iron filings were, what grew up?
Reeds.
Looked like regular reeds. But later on, what happened with the reeds? When they pulled them out, when the Yadus went there, Lord Krishna told them to go there. He said, oh, there's all of these bad omens. Now we're going to go to Prabhas and perform sacrifice. So they all drank this rice wine, sake. Made out of rice. And they became intoxicated, crazy intoxicated. And they started fighting with each other at hand. After they had used all their weapons, they pulled out these reeds. And as soon as they did, they turned into iron. They were, after all, made from iron filings. So they turned into iron, and then they really had some weapons. They started killing each other. But what was that little lump of iron? That also was eaten by a fish. And this Jerah, he caught the fish, and he found that iron file, and he used that little lump to make the point of that arrow, which then was shot at Krishna's heel, which he mistook for the face of a deer. So that's where we come at this point. And then, of course, it grazes foot. You know, as explained, it grazes foot. It didn't actually pierce the foot, although he was afraid it did. That's in the commentary, I think, it was explained. So he's mortified. You know, he realized, oh, he's the worship of Krishna. I've shot him. He felt he had committed a great offense. And now Krishna is assuring him, don't worry, it was all by my plan. You know, as pointed out, it's quite unlikely that with all this carnage of 560 million corpses all over the place and a huge racket and din, that there was still some deer around there and that he was just hunting a deer. But anyway, it was a pastime. So that's that brings us up to this verse. He's assuring this Jerah, and Jerah will go to Vaikuntha on a special airplane that came down for him. So he's part of he's a great devotee, actually. But what I wanted to, since there's no purport here, I felt I wanted to focus on this one word, or an assurance, where Krishna says, do not fear. Bhaya is fear. And we're going to go back, go back to the earlier part of this canto, where this subject matter is explored in these instructions of the nine yogendras to Maharaj Nimi. And there's a famous verse here about fear. Where does fear come from? And we'll read the purport of part of it. It's a huge purport. This is like the verse, you know, for the origin of fear and how to get rid of fear. So the verse goes like this: Bhayam dvitiya banavesha taksyad, ishadapi tasya viparyo smriti, tanmayato buddha abhijetam bhukjayakayesham buddha devatatma. Fear arises when a living entity misidentifies himself as the material body because of absorption in the external illusory energy of the Lord. It's called dvitiya. It means the second thing. It's the thing that is not dvitiya. It's defined here in the dvitiya. Vitiya, something that's seeming to be other than the Lord, that seems to be other than the Lord, that's separated from the second thing. When the living entity thus turns away from the Supreme Lord, he also forgets his own constitutional position as a servant of the Lord. This bewildering, fearful condition is effected or created by the potency of illusion called Maya. Therefore, an intelligent person should engage unflinchingly in the unalloyed devotional service of the Lord, under the guidance of a bona fide spiritual master, whom he should accept as his worshipable deity and as his very life and soul. I'm going to start reading this purport. I don't know if I'll get through the whole thing. So he quotes from the Acharyas here. According to Srila Sridhar Swami, the objection may be raised, that since fear is caused by ignorance, it can be dispelled by knowledge, and there is no need to worship the Lord. The living entity falsely identifies with his material body, family, society, and so on, and he simply has to give up this false identification. Then, what will Maya be able to do? In reply to this argument, Sridhar Swami is quoted the following verse from the Bhagavad Gita. This is a verse that we should all know. Gradually, we should know these verses. Daivi yesha gunamayi mama maya durutteya mameve epapadyante maya metan tarantite. This, Krishna says to Arjuna, this divine energy of mind consisting of the three modes of material nature is difficult to overcome, but those who have surrendered unto me can easily cross beyond it. Close quote. The living entity called Jivatma is one of the potencies of the Lord, but the constitutional position of the living entity is tatastha, or marginal. Being minute, every living entity is eternally dependent upon the supreme living entity, Krishna. This is confirmed in the Vedic literature as follows: Nityo Nityanam Chaitanas Chaitananam Eko Bahunam Yovadadati Kama. Among all the eternally conscious beings, there is one supreme eternal conscious being who is supplying the needs of all the others, or innumerable living entities. Krishna's Kaviraj has stated, Ekale Ishvara Krishna Arsabha Bhritya. Krishna is the one and only independent controller. All other living entities depend on him. Just as the finger is part and parcel of the body and therefore must always be engaged in bodily service, we as parts and parcels of Krishna have the eternal duty of engaging in the unalloyed service of the Lord. So the point here is that Knowledge alone is not enough. Just to know you're not this body is not enough. Because you may know it theoretically, but if you're not acting as a spirit soul, then that knowledge is theoretical and will be covered, and you're not actually performing the process by which purification can take place. So knowing that you're not the body means you have to act on that principle. Then what am I? I'm not just a spirit soul. I'm also an eternal servant of Krishna. You can't just live as a spirit. You have to have activities. If you're not acting under the influence of Krishna, you'll be acting under the influence of Maya. If you're not acting under the influence of Krishna's internal energy, which means devotional service, then you'll be acting under the influence of Maya, which means service of the body. And that means fearfulness. Because the body is by nature a very fragile unit. You know, if you identify yourself with this body, then comes death, old age, disease, accidents, all kinds of things, right? But if you identify yourself as a spirit soul and you actually live that life, then the fear goes because you're protected by the lotus feet of Krishna. You're fixed it. So it's really a question of turning away. Now this is a very important verse here. We become absorbed. If you turn away from Krishna, you become absorbed in Krishna's external energy. You have to be absorbed in something. This is the nature of consciousness, that you become absorbed. And you become absorbed in Maya. So that's a vipariyo smriti, asmriti. You forget. We forget who we are. We forget who Krishna is. We forget everything. And this word vipari is very important. It means reversed. Everything is reversed. As Akura says in his famous prayers, anityanatma dukeshu vipariya matiryaham. He's saying that, my dear Lord, he's identifying with a conditioned soul, this great devotee Akura, anityanatma dukeshu vipariya matiryaham. That in this reversed condition described here in this verse, I'm thinking that that which is temporary is actually eternal. Anitya. I'm thinking that that which is anitya, temporary, like the body, is eternal. Everything is backwards. I'm through the looking glass. Remember that story? So, anatma, that which is not me is me, the body again. And that which is the source of misery, I'm taking to be source of pleasure. This is the problem. All of this sense gratification is the source of misery. Krishna certified it such in the fifth chapter. And in this illusory dvandva ramo, I'm trying to enjoy the dualities of this world. Tamo vishta, becoming more and more covered by darkness of ignorance. And najane tvatmanak priyam. Oh my Lord, I completely forgot that you are my dear most friend and master. Atmanak priyam. You know, you are my dearest of us. So this is the condition of fearfulness. And the remedy is to reverse it. Buddha, you have to be Buddha. You have to be somewhat intelligent to understand this. Abhijetam, one has to worship him. Turn again toward Krishna. That's what it means when you chant Hare Krishna. You're again taking this mind, which is so absorbed in matter, and turning it toward Krishna in the form of sound vibration. And you see what a struggle it is. Due to habit, conditioning, the mind is used to thinking of these things, taking pleasure here, and memories, and this and that, plans, and all kinds of images, and whatever. So you have to concentrate. That's sadhana. That's the main sadhana. Chanting and hearing and focusing and concentrating. That's the main sadhana. And by contemplating Krishna, by chanting Hare Krishna, you get the desire to serve Krishna. Right? That comes. And then if you forget Krishna, you lose it. You know, it becomes covered. And so this is our struggle. When there's no more desire to serve Maya, when you're spontaneously attracted to be absorbed in Krishna's thought and his holy name, his service, his devotees, his words, everything, then you're cured. That's pure devotee. So, going on with any questions on this portion of the purport, it's quite extensive. Now you're going to quote from Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati next. All right, we'll have a little time later. The potency of the Lord that enlightens us in the Lord's service is called the chit shakti. The potency of the Lord that enlightens us in devotional service is called chit-shakti. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur comments that when the living entity develops a spirit of independence, He is forced to come to the material world, where he enters into various types of petty and undesirable behavior that create a fearful situation for him. And it's not just human life. All the animal life is completely controlled by fear. You look at the little birds, you know, they're out there doing what they're doing, but as soon as there's some danger, boom, they're afraid, they fly away. It's a constant anxiety, you know. The Bahiranga Shakti, this is the external. Bahi means external. Bahiranga Shakti, the illusory potency of the Lord, covers all trace of the Chit Shakti and imposes one material body after another upon the living entity for his gross sinful enjoyment. As further punishment, the living entity who has given up his loving relationship with Krishna loses all power to perceive the eternal blissful form of the Supreme Lord, who is his actual shelter. End of chapter 3, Bhagavad Gita. Avritam jnanametena jnanino nityabhidana kamarupena konte dushparena lainacha. That this lust, material desire, covers our knowledge of the knower. We are the knower, jnanina, but it's covered. And therefore we're under the sway, the control of this material desire, which is never satisfied. Never. It burns like fire. So we were just reading, kama istaste ritta jnana. So that therefore, the first thing, we have to control the senses. You have to stop this engaging in lusty activities impelled by your material desire. Very scientific. So, instead of taking shelter of Krishna, the living entity becomes attached to many temporary phantasmagorial forms, such as his personal body, the bodies of his family members and friends, his nation, his city, with its buildings and cars and innumerable types of ephemeral material scenery. In such a state of gross ignorance, the idea of returning to one's original identity no longer even crosses one's mind. This forgetfulness is the real killer. We haven't even the clue of what, you know, of our best interests, of what's going on. You know, but we think we do. Everyone thinks they have a philosophy, they have an idea about how to make it better, right? But they don't. By the laws of God, the three modes of nature are constantly in conflict, as stated in the Gita. This conflict is described in many places in the Bhagavatam as guna vyatikaram. When the living entity is bewildered by the interactions of the modes of nature, he comes to the conclusion of relativity and assumes that God and worship of God are simply byproducts of the relative contradictory interactions of nature's modes. In the name of anthropological, sociological, or psychological perspective, the living entity falls deeper and deeper into the darkness of materialistic ignorance, dedicating himself to mundane piety, economic development, sense gratification, or speculation in which he regards the absolute as lacking variety and personality, which he assumes to be products of the interactions of nature's modes. Now, this is something that we don't often think about, but actually, you know, every nation or every unit of society is really influenced very strongly by the most intelligent people there, those who are the educators, those who are running the schools and teaching in the schools. And because it all comes down into the educational system, all of us, I assume, went to grade school, right? I mean, most of us went to high school, and some of us went to college. Now, what did we get from that? We're being trained. Any society passes on its culture, its ideas of what's important, its sense of itself, history. You know, it's said that when there's a revolution, or you know, whoever comes out on top, they rewrite history. Right? You can see it. You know, even now they're rewriting personal history. We have all these politicians running. They're just making things up about their own past, trying to hide the stuff that you know they can't. People hate. They'll get them. You know, they won't vote for them. And the same thing happens with society as a whole. And just like the Chinese, you can't learn in school. You don't learn in school about the 1989 massacre, Tiananmen Square, where there was a little fillip of, you know, they tried to get democracy. They thought that was what they wanted. And then they just massacred people, you know. You won't read about it, you know. You can't see it on the internet. They filter it all out. They try to. So the idea is that The people who control the information and the education, they're creating a great conditioning among people. And they think what is right, who they are, you know. And what, you know, it's all based on the body and extensions of the body. So you're helpless. You know, unless you get an intervention of someone who comes to teach the truth, Prabhupada's books, I remember when, you maybe remember Mahat, in the old days, or at least you heard the history, in the 80s, when, you know, the Soviet Union was still strong, and they wouldn't, you couldn't go and distribute books. You know, they arrested devotees. So they had this whole underground thing. They were printing books in basements, you know, and distributing them on the sly. It was going out. And, of course, anything the government didn't want you to read, everyone wanted to read. So actually, book distribution was booming. And it helped to undermine the whole, you know, craziness of communist ideology and philosophy, which is bankrupt now. You know, no one really believes it in a pocket here or there. No one really believes it anymore. But for 80 years, the whole millions of people were running on that. You know? So the same thing is true. All of this materialistic philosophy, sociology, anthropology, it's all illusion. It's part of a big dream world that people create. What's important and what's, you know, worthy of study and like that. The illusory potency of the Lord is duratya. This is from the verse in Gita. Very difficult to overcome, impossible to escape without direct mercy of Krishna. The example may be given that when the sun is covered by clouds, no man-made apparatus can remove them from the sky, but the sun itself, which created the clouds, can immediately burn away the cloudy covering and reveal itself. Similarly, when we become covered by the illusory potency of the Lord, we identify with our temporary material body, and thus we are always in fear and anxiety. But when we surrender to the Lord himself, he can immediately free us from this illusion, and also free us from fear. Mahabhaya, that's the first word here. Don't fear. As stated by Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, atra bhaktai samsara bandhan, etc. In this Bhagavad Dharma, that's what we do. That's Bhagavad Dharma means dharma directed towards service of Bhagavan or Krishna. In other words, devotional service. In this Bhagavad Dharma, devotees have no need to fear the bondage of material existence. That fear goes away of its own accord for one who engages in devotional service. Now, this is a very powerful preaching point. And it's not really a preaching point. We have to, when we practice Krishna consciousness, what I mean by that, I'll explain in a minute, then you undergo a transformation, obviously. Right? We've all experienced it to some degree. We don't know the full transformation, but certainly there's a positive change that takes place. You can see it. You can feel it in your own self. And one of the things is your anxiety level decreases. It should. If it doesn't, then you're not practicing properly. Right? Prabhupada says, if you're not joyful like Krishna consciousness, you're doing something wrong. So that's an amazing thing. When people come in contact with that, if you're emanating that peacefulness, happiness, even in this world, which they don't have, you know, and then you explain to them the process by which they can also attain it. That's a very important way in which people come to Krishna consciousness. As Krishna says, arto jiga, the first thing is arta. If you're in distress, come to me. And then you can relieve that distress. So this fearfulness, anxiety is inevitable in the material world, as has been explained. And even in the early stages of Krishna consciousness, you can feel that cloud lifting from your heart. You can feel that you're being relieved of that. So it's not something that you can just know theoretically. It's something that you experience, and if you can transmit that to someone, or you know, in your interaction with people who have no idea of Krishna consciousness, that is a very powerful way. If they get a book, they'll be inspired to read the book. If they remember how the person who had it had a certain aura about him that was very rare, or you know, something that came to find it important. Okay, going on. It is important to make clear that bhayam, or fear, cannot ultimately be vanquished simply by impersonal self-realization as expressed by the words aham brahmasmi. So this is a standard phrase of the Mayavadis, but we also take it. It simply means I'm spirit. I'm a spirit soul. Remember that, you know, you're not that body, Prabhu. You're spirit soul. Oh, this is a good place for my little poem. how does that go? Oh yeah, everybody dies, nobody dies. Wake up, and open your eyes. You're not that body, you're a pure spirit soul. Chant the holy name and attain life's goal. We're going to do it one more time for Atma. Atma, you there? Okay. Everybody dies, nobody dies. Wake up, and open your eyes. You're not that body, you're a pure spirit soul. Chant the holy name and attain life's goal. Okay, back to the purpose. Aham brahmasmi, I'm a spirit soul. In the Bhagavatam, Narada Muni says to Vyasadeva, Naishkamim apyachita bhava varjanam. A mere naishkarmyam, or cessation of material activities and repudiation of the bodily concept of life, cannot ultimately save one. He says here it doesn't look very well if it doesn't have a chitta, if there's no Krishna consciousness there. The living entity must find a superior shelter on the spiritual platform. Otherwise, he will come back to the fearful situation of material existence. This is a verse in the 10th canto, that you, the impersonalists who are averse to serving Krishna's lotus feet, their intelligence is impure. And they may, by great austerity, they may rise. Just imagine how austere it is to repress the senses, and you have no holy name, you have no prasadam, you have no deities, you know. This is the impersonalist ideal. You're out there in the middle of a cave somewhere. I am spirit. You know, any thought that comes into your mind, that's Maya. All you can think of is I am that I am, basically, you know. I exist. Can you live like that? You know, maybe a very few can do that, you know, with a great force of will. And if they manage to get up to the Brahman platform, they fall down again. Because it's unnatural for the spirit soul. You want interaction. You want kirtan, you know. You want to chant shlokas with somebody, you know. You don't want to just sit in the room all day. So, therefore, although one may, with great labor and effort, struggle to the Brahman platform, if he does not find a suitable shelter, he will come back to the material platform. The suitable shelter is Krishna's lotus feet. His so-called liberation is liberation by imagination. The living entity is by nature pleasure-seeking, anandamaya. Now we are suffering because we are falsely seeking pleasure on the material platform, and as a result, we're becoming entangled in the painful complexities of material existence. But if we try to give up the pleasure-seeking propensity altogether, we shall eventually become frustrated and return to the platform of material pleasure-seeking. Although there is eternal existence on the Brahman platform of impersonal realization, there is no ananda. Variety is the mother of enjoyment. In the Vaikuntha planets, there is actual spiritual ananda. Krishna is there in his ecstatic spiritual form, surrounded by his blissful associates, all of them eternally full of bliss and knowledge. They're having nothing to do with the material existence. In the spiritual planets, even the scenery and the birds and animals are fully conscious of Krishna and are absorbed in transcendental bliss. Yadgadvananabhartante, when it goes, it never comes back. He will be fully satisfied and never come back to the material world. Therefore, Vishnu Chakravarti said, Kim Chatra Bhakti Sangsada Bandhan. Only the Bhakta actually becomes free of fear. In this connection, one more paragraph. Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati has emphasized the necessity of accepting a bona fide spiritual master. Now, that's in the verse. Who is Vrajendra Nandana Preshta, the dearmost servitor of the son of Nanda Maharaj, Krishna. The bona fide spiritual master is completely free from envy of other living entities, and therefore he freely distributes knowledge of devotional service to the Lord. When the living entities who are inimical to the service of the Lord somehow hear this knowledge submissively, they become free from the illusory potency of the Lord, which has covered them and thrown them into various miserable species of life. According to Srila Bhaktivedanta Saraswati, by the mercy of the spiritual master, the faithful disciple gradually realizes the transcendental position of Lord Narayan, who is served with great awe and reverence by hundreds and thousands of goddesses of fortune. So, I thought I'd share that with you. This idea of fearfulness, so much in the material world, you know, practically all of it, is just designed to distract you, to put you into denial about your actual situation here. Just think of driving. You know, I tell this story sometimes. There was a period in my devotional career in which I didn't drive for years on end. There was no car, there was no need for me to drive. And then again, I moved to Miami in 83, and then I needed to drive again. So I started driving. And suddenly, you know what, I used to be a taxi driver. I mean, I just drive around, you know. Suddenly, I was like, I was white knuckle, you know, because I realized, I was, you know, like a new driver. You know, when you first get into traffic, you know, whoa, they're going 50, 60, 70 miles an hour. Suddenly, I had that feeling, and that's the actual situation, right? It's very dangerous out there. You know, I was coming back from L.A., we're going 70, 80 miles an hour. And I opened the window because I was trying to stay awake, and I was just like, you know, so I did do that. But suddenly you realize, whoa, you're going 80 miles an hour. There's an 80 mile an hour wind out there. And at any moment, you know, somebody can, you know, it's extremely dangerous. But who remembers that? Oh, you turn on the radio, because I didn't have the radio, I had the iPod playing, you know, kirtan, you know, or in the airplanes. You're up 36,000, 32,000 feet. in this little tin can, you know. Oh, sir, would you like another drink? You know, they'd watch the movie. Oh, yes, let me put the seat back and just relax. There's danger at every second. But and the whole material world is like that. We're riding along in these bodies, very fragile. Anything can go wrong, heart attack, you know, somebody attacks it, disease, a million things. And it eventually does. And we forget. I'm okay, you're okay, we're fine. It's San Diego, sun is out. You see, this is the illusion. So, janmam mitya jada vyadi dukkha dosha nadarshanam, one of the elements of knowledge is to be very sober-minded and understand the evils of birth, old age, disease, and death. And at every second, the whole idea, it all comes down every second to really be calling out to Krishna to please save me, you know, from this fearful condition. And reinstate me at your lotus feet so that beyond danger and beyond, you know. And you can feel that if you're serving Krishna, that there's some solace there. And the real devotees, they take on dangerous positions, you know, which by instinct you try to avoid because it's so fearful, in order to serve Krishna. And we saw that with Srila Prabhupada, and, you know, and great devotees. You see all of them, you know, the Pandavas, Dhruva, Prahlad, you know, they didn't have the fear. The fear wasn't there. Prahlad's being attacked by this huge demon. He's 5 years old. Free of fear. It's a wonderful, important thing. And here Krishna said, Mabhaya, do not worry. If we're situated in Krishna consciousness, there's nothing to fear. That's what he's telling Jara. Don't worry, it was my will. You didn't commit an offense. And you can imagine, that, you know, the darkness lifting from Jara. Oh, he's not angry with me. And then he really got astonished when the plane came down and took him back to Godhead. Quite a turnaround mentality. Okay, any discussion on these points? What is fear? Bhayam dutiya manavesha taksyad. All right, little review. Krishna Kumar, what is the source of fear according to this verse? You remember?
Identification with the temporary body.
Yeah.
As the soul.
It's really this turning away, apetasya, turning away from Krishna and identifying with this external reality, which is given to us by Krishna through the agency of his external energy. You know, it's all his plan. You know, we're supposed to learn the lesson. This is it has several meanings. What is the meaning of this world? In order to let us to work out our karmic reactions, right, and our desires, and eventually, when we come in contact with this knowledge, to realize that it's bankrupt, that we can't be happy here, that our real place is in the spiritual world. That's the purpose of it. So, when you know, this verse is part of the lesson. Oh, this is the source of all your fear. Is your turning away from Krishna, your real safety and your real solace and your real home, and taking shelter of this material energy where there really is no shelter. And so that, and then everything is reversed. Right? This is the reverse, it's through the looking glass type mentality. That which is the source of misery, we're taking the source of happiness. Just like they have, you know, this political scene now. The guys are clawing and insulting each other, trying to, you know, get the votes to become the most powerful man in the world, right? The President of the United States. They don't know, according to the teachings in the fourth canto, when he describes King Prito, that the head man of any country, he takes on 1/6 of the sinful reactions of the people there. Because he's responsible to train them or to stop. Well, they don't know that. Can you imagine how many sinful reactions are going on in this country of 325 million people? They're all condemned. All these guys, you know, and not just the president, but anyone who's in charge, they're responsible for training, you know, people in their care and like that. So it's all. This is the source of this fearful condition, and one has to be intelligent. Buddha abhijetam. To worship that same person you turned away from. And then the key line at the end, tanmayata buddhaje bhakti aikayesha, but it has to be one-pointed bhakti. It can't just be mixed up with the material desire. The material desire is the disease itself. You know, you want a cure, and you're going to keep doing the things that made you sick in the first place. You know, you're not going to get well very fast, are you? So one-pointed bhakti aikayesha to the isha, and then guru devatama, the necessity for a guide. You know, a pure soul who you can worship, Guru Devatatma, it says, and regard as one's very self, which means that you have to put yourself under the guidance and the surrender. Because these latent desires and tendencies are very deep-seated. And we need that strong instruction. And we have to feel the heat. You have to feel the strength of the instructions from the spiritual master, which are like, they prevent us, you know, from doing that which we sometimes we would do even against our own interests. It's very important, you know, it's essential to have the guru. So that's all part of this one verse, very illuminating. Any other comment or question? Subject of fear. Yes, Haribo.
I've seen the actuary chart, which they do with insurance companies.
Yeah.
You see the presidents going in. There's the famous picture of Jimmy Carter's first time in the Oval Office. He is literally, he has jumped off the ground, and he's spinning.
No.
The famous picture. He's in such ecstasy that he finally got in there after all the hard work. And you see them when they go out, gray hair, haggard, they look like they've been through hell. And that's a common thing. You look at it when they go
no,
out.
No, I know, absolutely.
And it says that being the president, on average, takes 15 years off your life.
Wow.
10 to 15 years.
And these guys are all scrambling for that job.
And they're all scrambling. But you're right. I mean, and they think, well, it's stress or this and that. And those may be subcategories. Openly, it's a sinful reaction.
Yeah.
But it's with their next life.
Yeah.
You can certainly see that in Obama.
Yeah.
Oh, you see it in all
the guys drive up so fast.
Yeah, you can see the white hairs coming and everything. It's great. Anyone else? Comment or question? Thank you. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.